they wanted us to try and do it by the bar. Yeah. Up to you.
Well, yeah, I thought. Just look.
But volume is probably here.
Your script. Fantastic. Okay, so I'm gonna deliver the speech. Then I'll pass the mic to you. Okay. Excuse me. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, you please be seated. Sometime in the 1990s, I began to join Marvin on his walks up Old Peak Road to the tram terminus, from where he would run 3.6 kilometres along the Lugard Road Trail. Rain or shine, he'd power walk up three times a week, or alone or with whoever came along, a habit that's dated from 1954. I struggled to keep up with his storming pace up the steep incline. But after his run, usual time 23 minutes, and the ceremonial wringing of a pint of sweat from his t-shirt, Marvin relaxed and would reminisce about the past. As we ambled down Old Peak Road at a leisurely pace, Marvin always had a good story to tell, and a music anecdote about some famous person, and Marvin knows everyone who was ever anyone intimately. Stories of natural and man-made disasters, and of course, of Marvin-made disasters. As the weeks became months and then years, I noticed that Marvin never repeated the same story twice. This man really does have hundreds and hundreds of vignettes and anecdotes up his sleeve. On one journey down Old Peak Road, a particularly animated Marvin recalled his first trip to Asia on a US Navy vessel in 1946. As we anchored in the harbour, the call went out, "Blowjobs on the fantail!" That stopped me in my tracks. An epiphany came to me. What a great title for a book. Only problem was, there was no book. Over the decades, no one could budge the stubborn old bugger to write down his stories. I exhorted, pleaded, and cajoled, but finally came to the conclusion that I would just have to keep bounding up Old Peak Road if I wanted to hear more stories. Then, one day, out of the blue, Marvin said, "Okay, I'm going to write my memoirs." And once he started, he was unstoppable. Now he's written 8 books and doesn't show any signs of flagging. But that's another story. Even though Harvey Tomlinson at the publishers Make Do Publishing was not sold on the title I proposed, he was as charmed by the stories as I was. Although I'm not ill-disposed towards taking credit for things I haven't done, I have to remind you that Marvin wrote his own stories and Harvey was a brilliant midwife bringing out this book. Rather than repeat what you can read yourself or repeat things that cannot be published for at least 100 years, allow me to share an observation with you. Every time we walked down Old Peak Road together, Marvin was beaming with the joy of life. He was not fretting over meeting the payroll or any of those things that give people grey hair prematurely. He was not burdened with the weight of material possessions of those who believe the person with the most toys wins. No, this little memoir will raise smiles for years to come, proving conclusively that the one with the most joy wins. So with great pleasure, I present FCC member 004, Marvin Farkas. Journalist, war correspondent, cinema photographer, and author.
When I arrived, is it on? Hello? Okay, when I arrived in Hong Kong way back in 1954, I lived at the Correspondents' Club when it occupied a beautiful old mansion on Condit Road. The rooms were old-fashioned with bamboo furniture that looked like it came from a second-hand shop. But I lived there for over 2 years, mainly because I couldn't pay the rent. I wanted to pay the rent, but I just didn't have the money. But I became the chief subject of a conversation at every board meeting. My salary at the Tiger Standard was $600 a month, and it ran up a rent and food bill of over $1,000 a month. The committee told me they could excuse the rent for a while, but I ate all my meals there, and food cost money. But they took a personal interest in my well-being, and they couldn't throw me out to wander the streets. So they permitted to live. So that they permitted me to live at the club if I would confine my eating to the salad bar until my ship came in. The salad bar was a talk of Hong Kong with all delicious things to eat with a couple of slice of bread. It couldn't be beat. And God bless the committee for that. They saved my life. The club was the livest place in town, and every weekend we had a band, and they was dancing on the very spacious lawn. Peering over the outer walls, you could see the distance. You could see in the distance the Nine Dragon Mountains, and the harbor, great ships and junks and sampans coming and going. Then ugly high-rise apartment buildings went up on Condit Road. Then all you could see were those lathe and plaster apartment houses. It was a tragedy, and nothing less. Ah, memories when times were better. In my book, I try to recall a little of those better times.
Let me make a little segue here. And all of a sudden, this is the what did you describe it as? As a slow dissolve as Marvin sheds, well, a few years and becomes infinitely better looking, but that's all right. And the band played on from An Eastern Saga Chapter 6, modified for the reading by Marty Mertz. Saturday night was usually busy at the Foreign Correspondents Club. Light blazed from the main building, cars crowded the parking lot, and more overflowed onto the driveway. The band was playing dreamy dance numbers, and the floor was spilling over with people tripping the light fantastic. Some folks gazed out over the front wall at the exquisite night view of the harbor, and serious drinkers piled up three deep at the bar. I decided to jump the queue at the bar, managing to slip through the crowd and make my order. I thought I'd got away with it, but a red-faced young man sitting at the bar and well into his cups observed me.
I saw you sneaking in to get served, eh?
I just wanted to order the drink. I'm going now.
Are you a member of the Majesty's Army?
Not very likely. I'm an American.
So you're an American. So what? What have you got against the British Army? What's wrong with us?
Nothing.
We drove in from Shek Kong to enjoy Saturday night. We don't have to put up with any insults on bloody American.
Look, I didn't mean to insult you. I think the British are wonderful people.
Yeah? Yeah, so what's wonderful about them?
I've only been in Hong Kong a short time, but I'm very impressed with the way the British are handling the government here. And I'm sure the army is doing its part.
What makes you so sure?
He lifted his voice in an aggressive manner and began to shout. At this point, his wife, who was sitting on the stool next to him, tried her best to shut him up.
Take it easy, John. There's no need to get upset. We're all friends here.
Another Brit sitting on the end of the bar was drunk as well, and he looked like he was itching to get into the argument.
I'll tell you what's wrong with the army. They don't do a goddamn thing except march their soldiers up and down a couple of hours a day and spend the rest of their time playing football and drinking beer.
What makes you so smart, smart ass? I bet you're in the Navy.
You've got it, mate. We do all the patrolling and the dangerous work, like looking for illegals and searching Chinese junks for contraband.
The atmosphere was growing belligerent, and John's wife was visibly irritated.
Come on, can't you guys talk together like grown men? What do you got to fight about?
The Navy man looked incredulous.
Who wants to fight? We're just discussing things, that's all.
Yeah. Hey, Yang, what about taking my wife for a dance so we can discuss the matter in hand without a woman sticking her nose in?
You don't have to get rid of me. I just want you to behave like a gentleman, that's all, before we get thrown out of here.
Look, Yang, what's your name?
Marvin.
Okay, Marvin, whatever it is. Will you take my wife for a dance? I want her out of my hair for a while.
If she wants to, I'd be delighted.
Well, don't get too delighted. Just take her for a dance, that's all.
Of course. His wife got off the bar stool, and she appeared very pleased at the prospect of getting away from her husband for a short while. The band had started to play On a Little Street in Singapore. Cue the band. Cue the band.
Band.
She put her arm through mine, and we walked outside to the dance floor on the lawn.
I'm really fed up with that guy. He's always picking fights with strangers. Sometimes we get thrown out of here. Very embarrassing. Oh, God, it's such a relief to get away from that man.
But you seem so patient. Anyway, I'm glad he suggested this dance.
Do you mean it?
I do.
Did you particularly want to dance?
Whatever you say.
Why don't we take a walk?
She led me straight to the parking area.
Oh, this is our car.
She opened the back door and ushered me in. In a flash, she was in my arms, and before I knew it, we were kissing each other passionately. I thrust my hand down her open neck dress and discovered that she was one of those liberated women whose breasts were braless. And when she lifted up her skirt, I found out that she didn't wear any panties either. She was a rather large woman and moved like a freight train. And her heavy breathing resembled the whistle on the engineer's cabin to warn other trains that were coming through. Realizing our time frame was short, we made ardent love without dawdling. The windows began to steam up, but due to the limited time we had to spend on the actual deed, I couldn't afford to take notice of many other details. As it happens, we were in luck that no one passed by. When our brief encounter was over, we adjusted our clothes as quickly as possible. She put on some lipstick, ran a comb hurriedly through her hair, and we returned to the bar. I delivered her back to her husband, somewhat disheveled, although he didn't seem to notice. Just as the band was playing the final notes of On a Little Street in Singapore, I excused myself and went up to my room. I never saw them again, and I don't think I would have recognized them if I'd passed them on the street.
I will believe it. great Marvin.
Is this the book that my name is mentioned in?
No. The other book. Very good. Yeah.